Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of three Tuesday Morning Show hosts, and we welcome you to what I think is going to be a very fun and informative interview this morning. We're going to be talking to two folks that are very important members of the Idaho, are we Bonner County? Well, anyway, we're the Idaho Master Naturalist Group. We'll clarify that in a minute. But first, weather report. So if you've been looking out your window at all this morning, listeners, you'll know that we're having a little wet stuff and a little white stuff coming down. And it looks like we've got a good chance of that for most of the week. So today it was spitting down a little rain in town when I came in, and I think it's going to continue to do that. High today of 37 and then a low tonight of 23. And that's pretty typical for the rest of the week. Highs in the middle and upper 30s, lows in the low 20s, high teens. So helpful for maybe keeping some snow on the mountain up at Schweitzer. And for friends and family and folks that live high, a little higher than town, you're getting some snow, and we'll hear about that from our two guests. So without any further ado, I'll just go ahead and introduce our two guests this morning from the Idaho, well, it's on my outline, you'd think I'd be able to read it, the Master Naturalists of Bonner County. And you've heard this, our first guest before. He's a great guest for us to have here on KRFY. It's Patrick Myers. Hi, Pat.
Hello. Good morning.
Nice to have you join us. And we have a new victim, Christine Sandahl. She's the Water Life Discovery chair out at Water Life Discovery Center. Hello, Christine.
Well, good morning, everyone. And I am just delighted to have precipitation, and hopefully we'll have more snow coming.
More of it. Yeah, winter's not over yet.
Bring it on.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Fingers crossed. Well, first of all, if you would, just take a minute and tell us a bit about yourselves and how you came to be in the Master Naturalist Program. Let's start with you, Christine.
Okay. Well, I gave this a bit of thought. And after, being at the retirement age, there's kind of a lot to say. But just to sum it up, is I'm a lifelong learner. I just love learning. And as a science teacher for over 30 years, now retired, I was really looking for something that was engaging and, kept me learning, and found a good fit with a master naturalist. And so how that started was, as, looking through some posts online, I stumbled across the Idaho Master Naturalists, and I think first I emailed and I got in touch with Pat and then talked to him on the phone, and I thought, sounds like this is maybe a possibility, and took the classes and did the education hours and certified, and then was asked to be on the board, and then as Water Life Discovery Center chairperson, that's just been a challenge and lots of fun and many opportunities. So
here I am. You really jumped in with both feet. And I have to say that yes. Pat is an encouraging member of this organization. And he I have a feeling, had something to do with that, too.
Well, he made it sound very inviting and also not threatening. And I think some that first stumble across the Idaho Master Naturalist think I couldn't volunteer for that because I'm not a master of how could I do that? And I think it's kind of important to talk about that because people come with all sorts of different skills where they have mastery in different things, and they're bringing that to the organization and to all the activities and share that with others, and it's a wonderful thing. And so when people, as master naturalists are naturalists on duty, it's a little intimidating at first because you think, do I have to know everything about everything, really? And you really don't. You can talk about what you do know and then maybe defer to someone else that knows more about it, or get that person on a track to find out, what they're really interested in answering.
Yes, so that's important thing that you've pointed out. Pat, let's move over to you. We've had you introduce yourself before, but I'm going to ask you to do it again in case there's a listener who hasn't heard you before.
Okay, well, thank you, Julie. I retired to the area in late 2016. I actually grew up in the area, but spent most of my working career in the oil and gas business in Houston. But in 30 years ago now, we bought property up here for the purpose of retirement. And so I actually got to do that. And thank you. So in 2017, in the fall, I went to a class at the Trestle Creek area about the kokanee spawning there and the fisheries in the area. And that got me interested in joining. So I joined in the following year. And then I was education chairperson for 4 years, president for 2 years, vice president in my second year now, communications chair last year as well. So I've been involved quite a bit for the last several years. One of the things I learned as education chair is when I was hosting classes that other people were teaching is I learned a lot about all kinds of topics. And I kind of feel like I kind of became an educator. I've done, you know, some of the classes I teach myself for some different events. I'm doing one in our opening or the second day of the opening classes this year. And so I'm just very interested in doing that and learning all the time. So.
And it really is all about learning, isn't it? There is a lot of opportunity to learn something new with this group.
Yes.
That's for sure. Well, I would like to know what you all would like to talk about. I know there's an entire process for becoming a master naturalist, and that includes a wide range of classes that learners would have the opportunity to participate in. Do you want to start there?
Let's let Christine do that.
Oh, all right, Christine.
All right. So for master naturalists, if you're joining master naturalists for the first time and coming to our classes, there are like 40 hours of education and then 40 hours of volunteer time to become certified. And so with that 40 hours of education, there are opportunities for many different classes on a wide range of topics. So things like ice age floods, and then the unique ecosystem that we have here in our Sandpoint area, Bonner County and related areas, and native plants is another area that I find just absolutely wonderful to learn about. And I think many people are becoming aware of the importance of the native plants in the ecosystem and so on. We do have a list of opportunities for activities and for classes, and I think I can get us started on that.
Yes, and if I can interrupt for just a moment.
Sure.
I printed it out this morning and sent it over to me, and just the classes, some offered by the naturalists, some offered by other organizations, was 7 pages, and each class only takes up about an inch on a piece of paper. So it's a huge, huge offering.
It's a huge offering, and naturalists don't have to do all of those classes, but can pick the ones that really they relate to and they want to. They're just passionate about finding more about that topic. And so it's wonderful to be able to have organizations that we cooperate with that offer classes. And then the Monterey chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalist, that's us, also have classes that we organize and put on at the Waterlife Discovery Center. And so that's just a wonderful place for most of our classes to be presented. So Pat, do you want to talk about some of the classes coming up this year that are sparking your interest?
And guys, before you jump into that, Pat, let's just spend a moment and talk about why we're meeting now here in middle of February, because it's all getting started pretty soon, right?
That's right. We have classes coming up. The first class is March 27th, 1 p.m., and then, which is a Friday, and then the following morning at 9 a.m., we have our second one. Those are the introductory classes to get people knowing about the program. And then on the Saturday class, the 28th, it's the primary portion of that is the book that's Nature's Best Hope by Doug Tallamy. He's a proponent of planting native plants because that supports native pollinators, which are on the decline all across the country and the world. And so we just want to get people excited about that sort of thing. Our chapter is really big into native plants and proponing getting pollinators more food. A lot of the butterflies and bees are specific for a certain kind of plant, and if they don't have that plant in the area, then they're not going to survive. So that's the kind of thing we really want to get going on and get people excited about doing that.
That's right. And while you've got classes going on throughout the year, it sort of all gets going end of March. And so if one of our listeners is thinking, oh, maybe this is for me, they might want to jump online to your website and start looking at those courses, the ones that are live and also the ones that are online. And how would they do that? What is your website?
Mm-hmm. So if you do have questions, you can email imn.sandpoint@gmail.com.
Okay.
And there'll be a response to that. And there's general information at idfg.idaho.gov/masternaturalist.
Okay.
And also you can Google the Idaho Fish and Game homepage, their website, and then pull down under education and you will find the Wildlife Discovery Center, and you'll find pictures and basic information about the center, and to really start to picture what that experience might be like.
Yes, and that brings up a question I need to ask, which is about your relationship with Idaho Fish and Game. You have kind of a unique relationship with that organization, that department.
Idaho Fish and Game, they're the owners of the property for the Wildlife Discovery Center, and it's the old Sandpoint Fish Hatchery location on Lakeshore Drive, and it's about 10 acres altogether, and it has our education center, which is the old fish hatchery manager's home, and the original fish hatchery burned, and it was replaced with a metal building, which is there, and it's used periodically now by Fish and Game for some things, but it's not an active hatchery like it used to be. The water's too cold that's coming into it, so it's not really as productive as they need. So it has other uses. But Fish and Game is very, very helpful in coordinating efforts with the Master Naturalists. And so it's our home base, and then our projects and work that we're currently doing to get funding for improving the location, we're working together closely
with them. Yeah, and with them. Yes, they help you by offering that venue, and then you all help them by signing up for volunteer opportunities.
That's right. We have many projects that they are responsible for, and through over the years, as our people get trained in education, where they also can help on various volunteer happenings, or Fish and Game or other organizations as well. And so it's really good symbiosis, I guess is the right term, among our organizations. And as Christine mentioned, it's their property, and we go by, I kind of consider us as kind of volunteer employees of Fish and Game in a way, because we have to follow their rules, but we enjoy following the rules. So we have like minds on nature and conservation and that sort of thing.
That's really good. It's good when you can be partners and have it be a win-win, yeah. Which it is.
Yeah. So we've helped them with things like snapping turtle trapping, because snapping turtles are invasive here. And then loon surveys. We do host field trips for the school district. And then we're continuing to add to what we do. And so there's the pollinator garden that's been a new and wonderful addition to the Wildlife Discovery Center. And then the Master Naturalists are really involved in maintaining the grounds and making improvements to the facility.
Oh, they must appreciate that. You mentioned there are two components to becoming a Master Naturalist, the education component and the volunteering component, which we're talking about right now. And I'll just kind of nudge you a little bit more to talk about volunteering, just to the degree that you're mentioning that it can be with Idaho Fish and Game, but Master Naturalists can really kind of shape their own volunteering experience. Isn't that true?
Oh, it's certainly true. And an example would be this, in the 2025 year, a group of naturalists developed four different educational trunks for the school district. And so I was the person that worked on the trunk about fish. And then I'll turn it over to Pat, who might want to talk about the trunks a little bit more.
Please.
Yeah, we did the other ones. I did small mammals in North Idaho trunk. And we also have one on pollinators and one on bears. We added, what was the one, with the fifth one we added?
Raptors.
Oh, the raptors, yeah. Debbie did raptors. And this year we're working on another one that'll be hopefully be ready for the next school year. And these trunks, we actually did two each. There's one set that's in the Fish and Game office in Coeur d'Alene, and the schools down there can check those out. They're made for elementary schools age. A lot of educational fun activities in them, and it was a really fun thing. The ones for Bonner County this year are at the Lake Pend'Oreille School District office, and they get distributed from there to the various teachers who check them out.
That's cool. And are they just like literally like a big trunk?
They are.
Yeah, it's a trunk. It's a big tub on wheels. So because they are pretty heavy, but they contain curriculum for K through six. And so they're broken down into grade bands. So like a teacher that's teaching the younger ones or pulling from activities designed for the younger ones and so on. And the feedback that we're getting is very positive. I stopped by the Lake Pend'Oreille School District about a week and a half ago, and the teachers love having the opportunity to check these out, and they're free to the teachers, and it makes the teaching a little bit easier because the curriculum is already set, and then the trunks also contain hands-on activities, and so we're really promoting the hands-on memorable activities for kids.
Yeah, you've really made it easy for the teachers to have curriculum or lesson plan, whatever it would be called, and that's got to make them more willing and happy to have the trunks. How nice.
Yeah. I think it was a wonderful idea to get that going, and I think we have Perky Hagedon Smith to thank for really spearheading that.
Oh, shout out to you, Perky. Yeah. Thank you. She's so perky, and that's a great project. All right, mm-hmm. So I've prevented you from getting into classes and events, but now I think it's time for us to launch into that.
Okay. This last year we started with what we called a hybrid education program, which was a combination of watching videos and going to in-person classes and field trips. And that was so successful. We actually had 15 people join us last year, which is a fairly high number. Usually it's 10 or so, plus or minus, of new members. And 12 of those 15 certified, meaning they got 40 hours of education and 40 hours of volunteer time. In your second year, you need to get 8 hours of continuing education plus 40 hours of volunteer time to recertify. But that was the highest percentage of new members certifying that we've ever had.
That's wonderful. What happens in ongoing years, Pat? Do you always have to have the 40 volunteer hours?
Right, yeah, okay. We do. And during the COVID years, they got dropped to 20 because people weren't supposed to be out doing things. But for 2 years, it was 2 or 3 years maybe, but it's typically 40 hours every year to certify for the volunteer portion. And then, like I said, the 40 hours first year and 8 hours in subsequent years to recertify.
From the education standpoint.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. For education.
Yes,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, 40 hours go by pretty quickly when you're doing something fun and volunteering.
They do. Yeah.
I think so.
But as far as the classes go, we've got such a variety of ones. We've got a couple of mammal ones. There's recreation in bear country, and we have some videos on mountain goats and elk survival monitoring that Fish and Game puts on. We have three classes related to geology and ice age floods. We have seven on plants and trees, six of them on watersheds and different water systems. We've got several on birds and bats, some introductory classes about journaling and what a master naturalist about and that sort of thing. We've got a couple this year on entomology and two on fisheries. And there's a forestry class that we do, and we have some, Scotchman Peak's going to come to do a talk about their program as well. So It's quite a variety of classes that we put on. We have over 30 classes that we do, that we organize, and there are about an equal number of classes by other organizations that Julie mentioned earlier on the long schedule we have. We have dozens of videos to watch you get education credit for from either classes that we have done in past years. During the COVID years, we did videos, Zoom classes, and other ones that we have been discovered are education, or the person who does a class setup is Pam Gomes, and she's done a really good job of finding good related videos. So the class schedule setup where we have maybe two or three or four videos that are, say, water-related right before we do an in-person class on a water-related project of some kind. And so it's all linked together, just suggesting you watch these videos before you come to the class. So that's worked really well. Some people who are not retired yet, don't have time to come do all the classes during the day, because a lot of our instructors need to be there on a weekday because that's part of their jobs. If it's a fish and game personnel, for example, they don't want to have to be paid overtime for work done on the weekend. So they'll come teach a class on a Thursday, for example. We do typically do Thursdays and Saturdays. And so if somebody can't come to a Thursday class, they can watch videos to get education credit for a same topic or anything else.
I see. And are the live lessons, the Thursday and Saturday ones, available via Zoom, or do you have to be at Water Life Discovery?
Yeah, anything live is going to be in person. We have not been set up for Zoom except for during the COVID years when we couldn't meet in person.
Yeah, understood. And it is good to show up for some classes and meet your fellow master naturalists and all that. There is a social element. Well, I would like to just talk about some of the classes that you're offering. You've touched on them, but they sound pretty cool. Here's one on April 16th, Recreating in Bear Country. Who wouldn't want to know more about that? Have you both taken that course?
I have, yes.
And man, that's an important one. And then the Butterfly on April 17th, I see Butterfly Atlas Webinar. Now, that's a webinar, but it's also one that you're doing, it looks like.
Yes.
Okay, so that they won't have to, folks won't have to show up in person for that one. But I mean, they just go on and on and on. Listen to this one, folks. Bird Watching Walkabout, Find Birds by Sight and Ear on the WDC grounds. Now, who wouldn't love an introduction to birding, and especially with the bird calls?
Yeah, just to talk about that one, Carrie Hugo has been a great supporter of us over the years on teaching classes for us on birds, bats, raptors, lots of things. But she is an expert on birding by ear. So if you go out into a forest, especially when it's not wintertime, when the leaves are there, there's going to be birds singing in the trees. She says, oh, that's a green-throated or warbler or something. I don't know what the birds are. But she can identify by their songs. And then other people are good at that as well. But she really does a great job in teaching it that way as well as by sight. But you'll hear more than you can see typically.
Oh, absolutely. One of your fellow members who's a friend of mine, I'm just going to give her a shout out right now because she's a great contributor to our station, a great supporter. You, Laura Forsberg, hello, if you're listening. Laura has a great ear for songbirds and other birds, and I'm always so amazed. And she will then go to the aid of Merlin, too, the bird app. But it's so fun to be with someone who can really ID a lot of birds just by their bird song.
Yes.
Super fun. Well, that would be a fun class for anybody. And then I'm just going to mention, I see on Thursday, May 7th, also at Water Life Discovery, Mushrooms of the Inland Northwest. How fun. You could learn to actually identify some things on your own and maybe find a mushroom or two that you would eat. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have mushroom classes in the spring and the fall.
That's
because
cool.
We have, they pop out at different times of year.
Yeah. So I've been fortunate to be able to go on like the mushroom foraging part of that class, which is just a wonderful walk. And there's a bit of luck involved, you know, what time of year you go and if there's the right moisture. But the day that I went mushroom foraging, it was glorious and mushrooms everywhere and all so many different kinds. And then the teachers knew so much about each kind and what kind of precautions you take if you're going to cook them, and cooking methods, and just walking on a trail in the woods and finding these treasures.
It's fun to have a walk with a purpose, isn't it?
It is. It's just wonderful.
Yes. Were your instructors any of our semi-famous mushroomers from the area? Was it Art Clark or
Yes. Don Childress, who everybody at KRFY should know.
Yes, thank you, Don.
And with Trout Unlimited, he does our fall mushroom class and foraging field trips typically.
Mm-hmm. So they're true experts. So if you learn a mushroom from those guys, you'll be able to feel confident
more confidence, yes.
Yes,
that's great. And Don has in his presentation on the mushrooms, he's got a special guest in some of the photos named Julie Calamine.
That's possible. He's my mushrooming buddy.
Yep. He is.
So I know I love mushrooming. That's why I'm mentioning that one. I also notice on May 10th and 11th, and this would be really nice for folks if they're new to Idaho, relatively new, identifying Idaho's conifers and other trees. I'm from Minnesota, and my bachelor's degree is in landscape architecture, but the trees are not the same here, and I had to learn my trees again and other plants. So great class there.
Yeah. So I'm so glad you mentioned the trees of North Idaho. I also lived in the Midwest, spent a lot of time in Minnesota. When I came out west, had to learn all the names of the trees. And what was confusing at first is there's so many common names. They're a bit confusing. And so I sorted that out and then just fell in love with the conifers here in North Idaho. And being a high school science teacher, taught biology and horticulture, what a wonderful thing. And so what I found is many students, teenagers, look out the window and say, what kind of tree is that? They go, oh, it's a pine tree. And I go, they're more evergreens than just pines. And so we're gonna, see if we can make a distinction and
dive in. And
yeah. And so it opens up a whole world for people to appreciate the unique ecology of those trees.
And our forests are so evergreen filled here and they just smell great. It's great to get out and do a evergreen walk and enjoy that fragrance. So great. Well, I'm going to suggest we take a short song break and we here in the studio will gather and discuss what we're going to talk about when we come back, and hope you, the listeners, I hope you all will enjoy this uplifting song for the morning, which is North Idaho and the Idaho Panhandle and Sandpoint. For those of you just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, Tuesday Morning Show host, and I'm joined this morning by the Pondere Chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalist. Hey, I think I got it right, you guys. And my guests today are Christine Sandahl and Patrick. So here we are again, and we wanted to talk a bit more about education opportunities and volunteer opportunities, but then there's some other areas of interest that Pat and Christine want to cover. So I'm going to say take it away, Pat or Christine.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I'm the Water Life Discovery Center chairperson, and sounds pretty good, but so many things involved with that, from like ordering the consumables and lining up volunteers for covering the naturalist on duty spot, which is important. But then also we have displays inside the Wildlife Discovery Center, educational displays. And so there's the opportunity there to update and add to those displays to the point where now I have gotten two people to assist with that.
And these areas where your volunteers spend time count as volunteer hours, whether you're manning the station or working on displays, that kind of thing?
Exactly. And that 40 hours of volunteer time is remarkably easy to get, especially if you find kind of a niche where, you have maybe the interest or the background that really adds to that particular activity. And so you just become a very important part of the whole program. But you can pick the areas that you find that suit you the best or that you have the most to contribute to. And so, and they can be a wonderfully outdoors types of things, like a big project we had over the last year was removal of noxious weeds from the Wildlife Discovery Center grounds, and in particular Canada thistle. I'm trying to think of, you know, the better name for it, but it's a plant that is very hard to get rid of, and spraying poison on it, not an option. So removing it with a weeder and just not letting up has made
stout gloves.
Stout gloves and something called a grandpa's weeder, which is an easy tool to use, and it pulls the weed right out by the roots, and it has made a huge difference. And so if we continue with what we're doing with that removal, we'll have it under control. I think there's no way to totally eradicate it, but we've made great advances with that.
Good for you.
And so it took a whole team of people to do that by dividing the center up into different zones, and then people kind of adopting a zone. And it's just what a wonderful thing to do to bring people together with that shared goal. And it's worked.
And in a location where it'll be very noticeable that it's working. Yes, yes. I've had that lovely experience in my house at Sagal, my old house in Sagal, and it does seem like an unending task. And I had a college professor back in Minnesota who, when referring to that particular invasive plant, would say, "That one's a bear cat." And I think it's true. It's a tough one. So good on you guys.
It's a tough one.
It is a tough one.
Yeah. Other opportunities are helping with the fifth grade water festival, the water festival that takes place every year for every fifth grader in the Lake Pendere School District. It's
actually the whole county.
The whole county. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So it's like hundreds of kids over the course of 2 days. And there are different stations that the kids go through that have to do with all things kind of related to water and nature and mammals and pollinators. And it's a fun couple of days. So I've done that for a couple of years as some of the other newer master naturalists. And contributing, you know, your ability to work with that age group is really important, and I think one of the most important activities that happen in the springtime that our master naturalists can contribute to. And so, you know, if it sounds like something for you, you know, just contact us and get you lined up.
That's right. And kids, spring is coming and they can't wait to get outdoors. It must really be a fun several days for y'all.
It's fun. Okay. Yeah. As a teacher, I worked with older kids, the high school students. So the fifth graders' enthusiasm and just openness is very refreshing. And, you know, it's like there aren't many high school students that'll come over and give you a hug after you've done a little presentation, but they're just so spontaneous that's happened, and it's just heartwarming.
How nice. Listeners, that would be a nice way to get started if you decide to become a master naturalist. That would be a fun way to get going. All right. And
let me add a little bit, if I could, on volunteering at the Wildlife Discovery Center. We do monthly cleanup area for there, whether it's mowing their lawn, but a lot of things. Like right now, over the winter, we've had a lot of down branches from some of the old birch trees that are there, and they're just broken off and fallen down. So the first one's coming up in early May, and we'll try to do monthly after that. Mm-hmm. And we also we've made bee hotels, birdhouses, and bat houses over the years, and we're going to do some more birdhouse fabrication this year, so that'll be some volunteer time that people can do.
So what I'm hearing you saying, guys, are that if you're an outgoing person who likes to work with the public, there's great opportunity for that. Or if you're a person who likes to put things together, you've got opportunities there. Or if you just like keeping things neat and clean, there's another way to participate.
And others, we during the break, we talked about a friend of ours, Ken Dewis, who's one of our members, and he's really into trail maintenance for both Idaho Trails Association and Scotchman Peaks, and that all counts as good volunteer time as well. So yes. anything that, that you can do out in nature that is a conservation-related topic, then go for it. It counts as volunteer time.
And it's double volunteer time. What could be nicer? It's like double points. Yeah. Way to go, Ken.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Patrick, have we talked enough about events and volunteering? I know you want to be sure that we touch on an interesting development with your organization.
Yeah, I think one thing before doing that is one of the things we try to do in our classes is have field trips as much as possible so people have hands-on experience. So and we mentioned before the birding and tree identification, but we do field trips for those. We got geology and Ice Age floods field trips. So we just try to get out as much as possible, the mushroom foraging we mentioned. So wherever possible, we try to go ahead and do the field trips along with a class or in some cases just a field trip. But the thing I wanted to really mention is we've just started in November. Debbie Crane, who's our president of our Master Naturalist chapter, did all the paperwork to start a new nonprofit called the Friends of the Wildlife Discovery Center. And the purpose of that is for us to receive funds through either donations or grants to help with projects to improve the facility at the Wildlife Discovery Center. It's now a 501c3 organization, so people can donate to that and get the tax credit for it. And that's a project that we're really excited about. We have a lot of things planned for this year and some other longer-term projects. Because it is a fish and game property that we're on, they have approved the projects that we've identified and some of the projects they've come up with on their own. We've had a meeting with them to get concurrence on what we're going to go after. Some of the smaller projects that have been held off for a few years because of lack of funding, we're going to go ahead and do this year. So we've got a list of maybe 10 or so different of those. But we've got that now, and we're going to work. We're getting some donations, but we're also going to apply for grants. Christine is on the board of that, as well as I am as well. And we have different people applying for grants for us, and we're also going to try to get donations as where we can to help us create some projects that help improve the facility.
Yes, and since you're a volunteer organization, these funds would be for, I imagine, materials and other things, transportation, et cetera, those sorts of things.
Primarily, it's going to be for the materials for that, for the facility. So,
makes sense.
Yeah. May I just go over a few of those things we're thinking of doing?
Absolutely.
We decided in one of our board meetings for the Friends of Wildlife Discovery Center that it'd be nice to have some signage out on Highway 95 directing people to the Wildlife Discovery Center, the like the brown signs they have for nature-related places to go to. And Perky Smith-Hagedon has contacted the state, I guess it was, and they said, yeah, we'd love to do that. So they're working on, they've got the signs ready. They're going to put them up sometime this spring. So that's going to be really nice. When the Wildlife Discovery Center was first worked on, Mark Taylor was a fish and game employee, and he was getting ready to retire about 15 years ago, I guess, maybe a little bit more. So he spent some years getting it ready, for the building that we do our headquarters. Did a lot of modifications to that, and so that's one of the things that we have received from him are some of the photos that were there from when he was doing all the work and the upgrade of it. But we found out also that there was a crosswalk going across the road to the nature walk that we have. And we want to put a crosswalk there because on Lakeshore Drive, sometimes the traffic goes really fast across there. And we're going to go ahead and put up a new crosswalk there ourselves. Or if we can get the county to do that, we'll do that as well. We want a new riding lawnmower for the grounds. Ken Dewis is the one who's been doing a lot of the mowing, and we don't have a riding lawnmower anymore because the one that was there was no longer working. One of the bigger first projects that I've been working on is putting a pedestrian bridge over a portion of the pond. We have some giant rainbow trout in there that are probably 24 inches long now, and I'm guessing 10 or more pounds at this point. They're really big, fat fish because a local guy comes to feed them almost daily, and they've gotten big, being there for about 4 years now. So we want to put this bridge over the top of where they normally get fed, and they'd be for viewing the fish and feeding the fish for the, when the families come and to do that. So that's a bigger project that we probably won't get done this year, but we're working on getting some budgeting for it.
That's right. Now, let's point out, those fish are not for catching.
That's correct. But so, one of the projects that Fish and Game would like to do is make it a put-and-take pond for fishing, where you can catch and take them home with you. But, wow. And part of their idea is that is to make the pond bigger as well to get more fishing area.
Yes, it's kind of small right
it
now.
It is. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. So that's a long-term project that's on our list.
All right.
Yeah. So one of the projects that I've been working on for grant writing is for materials to make silhouettes of animal families, like a moose family, deer family, coyote family, et cetera, to put it in strategic locations around the center grounds, and then have interpretive signs along with those.
Fun.
And so that's one that I think we can, well, probably within the year, we'll have up and running. And so that's an exciting idea, something more interactive.
Yes.
As people take their walks.
Well, I need to just say this. The work of, you know, establishing a 501c3 and grant writing, all of those can be tedious projects. So thank you to the volunteers who are willing to take on those. And that's another whole other area of volunteering. And some people enjoy those sorts of projects and others not so much. So when thinking about whether that might be a fit for you as a master naturalist, there's another area.
Right.
Yes.
So I think one of the things, if people are interested in becoming a friend of the Wildlife Discovery Center, if you want to donate, you can become a friend, actually, if you donate or if you volunteer time to do some work for help us out.
And that doesn't necessarily make you an actual master naturalist. It makes you a friend.
Right.
You're helping.
That's right. You can go to our website, which is HTTPS, but friendsofwdc.org. And we have a donate button at the top right. And then if you scroll down the homepage, it's at the bottom of the page as well.
You'll
immediately get a receipt sent to you of your donation. And we really appreciate that. We've gotten a few thousands of dollars donated already without any grant funds coming in, but we're hoping to get grants for various projects as well.
All right. Well, we have covered a lot this morning, and as we are starting to come to the end of our time, we've got a few more minutes. I think you, Christine, wanted to take the time to help listeners understand the steps if they wanted to get in touch with you all and just sort of go over that again.
So if you're interested in finding out more, or if you'd like to sign up for our 2026 Master Naturalist classes, which start on March 27th and 28th. And so they could contact us by email. It's the imn.sandpoint@gmail.com. That's imn.sandpoint@gmail.com. And you'll get some documents that need to be filled out. There's some like release forms and that type of thing. But then you'd be signed up with the cost of $65 for taking those classes. And they're just absolutely worth every penny. And if you're interested at all, you know, get in touch. If you want someone to call you back and explain more about it, that I'd be happy to help with that as well.
Yes, absolutely. And you've mentioned it earlier that it is this combination of in-person and online, and that combination has really helped you find folks that maybe have full-time jobs or that sort of thing.
It can really make a difference. And I think we see that reflected in how many of our members last year certified, because it gives another option. Would welcome that.
Right. Well, this may be putting you on the spot, so I don't expect you to have to answer this question, but if either of you do have maybe a fun story or something to share about an interesting volunteering opportunity one of the Master Naturalists has done, or yourselves. Is there anything that just comes to mind when I ask you that? Really fun little ways that folks have volunteered.
Pat? I can do one. I mentioned bee hotels. So for helping pollinators, you know, not all bees live in hives like the honeybees. You have the cavity-dwelling bees. Bumblebees, for example, they live underground and in under rocks and in holes and that sort of thing. But the cavity-dwelling bees, which are like the mason bees and the leafcutter bees, live in hollow tubes of dead plants from the previous year. Or we've made some hotels out of log rounds where we just drill different size holes in there, 6 inches deep in a 7-inch depth piece of log with a roof on it, because you want to protect them from the rain. And then they'll find those holes and live in there and then lay their eggs in there, and then that next generation will hatch out. I have two of those at my house now, and I've got about half of the holes plugged up over the winter, waiting for a spring for them to come out as new bees.
Both
mason and leafcutter bees, mm-hmm. I have in my bee hotels. So that's a project we did last year.
Yeah. And you can do it and have it at your house and really see the results. How fun.
And it's easy to do. Anybody can do it themselves if they have a piece of a log.
Right. So. That's a great little project.
Yeah.
Christine, anything that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I would like to mention the youth fly fishing clinic. And that's held in the springtime. And we couldn't do it without the help of Trout Unlimited. So shout out to them. And there's room for 20 students who are teenage years are, you know, probably the best for this early teenage years, where we have lessons in how to use a fly rod for practice, and then actually the students get to try their skills by using a fly and fishing in the Wildlife Discovery Center pond. And I've taken photographs as a volunteer for that event for several years, and it is that stands out in my mind. It's just such a meaningful time for those students, and to see the look on their faces when they actually catch a fish. It's like maybe for the first time.
I've participated in that, not with you, Christine, but in other years, there have been three components to that course. One is some insect ID, which some kids seem to really enjoy, a little easy fly tying class, and then the fly casting. And it's so much fun because there's something interesting for all of those kids. And I would say it's a little bit like your fifth grader time in the spring, a lot of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Can get a little wild, but it's fun for those kids.
Memorable.
Yes. Yep.
So I want to add a couple things if we still have time.
We have a little bit of time.
We have an article coming out in the Reader tomorrow. Thursday this week, about the recruiting article about the Master Naturalist and how to join. And there's going to be one coming out in a co-op paper in early March. It's also listed online. For the March 27-28 on Sandpoint Online. And we have the flyers that have been posted in the area as well, to try to let people know on local bulletin boards that who we are and how to join. So just, you know, if you see those, then give us an email at imn@sandpoint.com, sandpoint@gmail.com, and we can give you information and get you signed up.
Very good. And listeners, if you yourselves maybe aren't quite ready to become a Master Naturalist, if you think of someone for whom it would be a good fit, give them a call or text them, and maybe that'll help your organization too. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to wrap up what's been a great chat with Pat and Christine from the Panhandle chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalist. It's been so interesting, and I hope there's been a listener or two out there that find it to be something they'd want to look into. So I hope you'll do that. Okay, this is KRFY. The Tuesday Morning Show is coming to an end. If you haven't made your annual donation yet, or you'd like to start becoming a member, it's easy to do. You can go to krfy.org and find the PayPal tab or the donate tab. You can call us, leave a message, and we'll get back to you. That's 208-265-2992. Or you can mail a check to P.O. Box 2465 Sandpoint 83864. All right, everybody. I hope you've had a great day, a great morning, and you're going to continue to enjoy this somewhat spring-like but wet weather. And we're going to go out with a song, which is another one I think is uplifting, Townes Van Zandt with To Live Is to Fly. Have a great one, everybody.